Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I wrote the Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, as well as the Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. This episode features one of three guests who were part of my weekly hour-long NPR show broadcast over the air every Sunday on WLIW-FM 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island where it has broadcast continuously for over 15 years. This show is about dogs, cats, and other creatures who share the planet with us. Please check out my other Pet Talk podcasts at TracyHotchnerPets.com. This show would not be possible without the longtime support of Woruva, the pet food company founded and privately run by David Foreman, who named it after his rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva is a quirky name for a company with whimsical names for the dozens of different cans and pouches of cat food they make. But what sets them apart is how serious David is about high-quality nutrition. They were the first pet food company to use human edible ingredients and process them in the same facilities that make human food, remaining privately owned and run, accountable only to their own high standards. This show is also made possible with the generous support of Dr. Elsie's, the privately owned litter and cat food company founded by Dr. Bruce Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian. He personally created many styles of litter to make sure that even the fussiest cats would not have out-of-litter box problems, the number one reason people abandon their kitties. Dr. Elsie also created his own brand of cat food called Clean Protein, the first dry cat food I can recommend because it's based on the protein found in a cat's natural prey. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of my New York Cat Film Festival, of which I am the founder and director, along with the annual New York Dog Film Festival, which premiere in New York City every October and then travel the USA and Canada supporting local animal welfare groups. Go to dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com to find out when we'll be where. It is an absolute delight to have the author Alex Cava back on the show. She's a New York Times bestselling author, but more importantly, she has an enormous family of people who read her books, love her books, and get to come to Omaha, Nebraska once a year for a weekend with lunches and dinners and talks with other Rider Creed fans. Her books are Breaking Creed, Silent Creed, Reckless Creed, Lost Creed, Desperate Creed, Hidden Creed, Fallen Creed, and now we have Midnight Creed. The books are so good, and true thrillers, great detective stories, or great unravel the mystery stories or save someone's life stories, but also great stories in the dog and dogs who are in them. Alex, you have Westies at home in Omaha, Nebraska, and have they ever wound up in one of your books? I don't think I've noticed that.
I have not put Westies. I have put some of my friends' dogs in, like when they've passed. I've done like a memorial thing, and I've named my Westie that passed away when I started this series, my Scout. He passed away after 16 years, and I was just starting this series. And I named Jason's one of the canine handlers. I named his black lab Scout after my Scout.
Well, that was perfect for, you know, the kind of serious military or highly trained search and rescue human remains dogs that are in your books. But lucky that a cute Westie had such a heavy-duty military-sounding name, Scout, Captain. He's out in the field. Why have you not put more Westies in? I mean, you love them so much. How can you control yourself?
I don't know. You know, things that I put in my books have a way of becoming real and happening. It would hurt me so much if they were hurt or if something happened to them. I've just been a little bit cautious that way. But who knows? I might end up putting one in. Westies are cool.
They're so cool. It's such a great breed and so wonderfully unpopular that everybody knows what a West Highland White Terrier looks like, a Westie. But not many people have had one. And I think those who've had them wouldn't have it any other way. You also recently adopted a Jack Russell Terrier. Is that true?
It is a terror. That's, you know, I have made this mistake that not a terrier is not a terrier is not a terrier.
That's right.
And there was this rescue organization here in Omaha that had just rescued from a puppy mill a bunch of Jack Russell Terriers. And one of them, and most of them were puppies, but this one in particular was already 7 months old, and she was only like 8 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
Just tiny, and she's a wired hair terrier, but so full of life and just so loving. The first time we met her, it was like, she's got to be a part of the family. But, oh my God, talk about high energy.
Yeah.
I thought I knew what I was getting into. And of course, we named her Grace.
Of course.
The Jack Russell that's in, that my Ryder Creed character has working with him.
Which is very, so you knew Jack Russell well enough to keep, put one in the book. And have it be very...
Oh, Tracy, I thought I did.
That's so cute. Alex, you're so sweet. You know, you have such a tough edge in the stories. I mean, this Midnight Creed, there's a lot of scariness and, you know, social violence and children being lost. And yet you're such a sweet and kind person yourself. I think it must be very exciting for people when they get to come to your very special weekend, which is this October. And I know that tickets only recently went on sale, and you have such a huge fan base, it sells out. But I'm wondering if anyone listening, if over the years that Alex has been on the show, and if you haven't caught her other interviews with me, just go to TracyHotchnerPets.com, look up Dog Talk, and then there's a search bar. You could put in the name Alex Cava, and every time she's been on the show, you could listen to her past interviews and get a real sense of what a wonderful lady she is and what a good writer and what a dog lover. Can you talk a little bit about this great event that you put on? I've never heard of another living author doing it. Well, of course, a dead author wouldn't do it either. But, I mean, the idea that you are so busy and you have so many books that you write in a year, and that you make this effort, this genuine effort to meet your fans and to meet your readers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, it all came about, I used to do book tours. And I would go across the country and meet readers that way. And I think it was back in 2016 or 2017. I'd been traveling for almost, 16, 17 years. And I just didn't want to do that anymore. And my manager who works with me said, well, why don't you just bring readers to you? And I laughed and I said, who's going to want to come to Omaha, Nebraska? And the first year we did it, I think we had 75 people, which blew me away.
It's a lot.
And then the second year, well, who wants to come to Omaha, Nebraska? But the second year we had like 165, and then it's like grown incrementally. During the pandemic, we had to cancel a couple of them.
Understandably.
And I didn't feel really comfortable even last year doing it, but so many people have said, when are we going to do it again? When are we going to do it?
Wow.
So this October, October 12th, in Omaha, Nebraska, we're going to have the luncheon, and it's actually more than a luncheon because it goes from 11 till 4. Last year I had one of the last times that we did the luncheon, I had a former deputy prosecutor who's become a friend of mine. And we talked about how a lot of her crimes have ended up in my books, and people love that.
Yeah.
So this year we're going to do a Q&A where readers, before they come, can submit their questions that they would love to have me answer. And we do big giveaways. We have somebody with a dog show up. We had a diabetes dog in training show
Neat.
Up the last time.
Neat.
So it's just a fun time, and we really try to make it special for the readers. We keep the tickets at the same level, $65, and that includes lunch, and you get a bunch of swag that you get to take home. You can buy books that are heavily discounted.
The thrill for them is to be able to meet you and see you in the flesh and talk to you.
And this is not we don't make any money off of this. This is truly for the readers.
Yeah, I can imagine that when you have to rent out a lunchroom at a hotel, it comes out to more than that per person just for the lunch part or the rental of the room. But you have people coming from all over the country. I mean, you'd think, okay, so some Nebraskans stumble in out of the cold, right? Although in October it's not that cold.
Yeah, the last time we had 14, we had people from 14 different states, and that didn't include Nebraska. And already this year, we just put tickets on sale on Sunday. It's Tuesday. We have somebody coming from Massachusetts,
wow.
A couple people from Florida, from Maine,
wow.
From Nevada. So it truly is. It's, I like to tell people, it's kind of like a reunion of book lovers.
That's
you
so
all
neat.
Know that you might not know each other, but you have something in common. Dogs and books.
Definitely, but particularly your dog / thriller books, because that's
sure.
a long way to come. So they have lunch and do the Q&A and chat with each other, but obviously they stay over at least two nights in a hotel, the night before and the night of. Do people who come just arrange dinners amongst themselves? Or it feels like it's a community where everybody would be doing a lot of group activities.
It is amazing how many people have gotten to know each other and have done things. A lot of people will schedule trips to the zoo. We have one of the world-renowned zoos in Omaha, the Henry Dorley.
No kidding.
And we have a neat little area called the Old Market that has all kinds of restaurants and shops. Omaha is in that top five of restaurants per capita because of Warren Buffett. So we have the most millionaires per capita too. So we have a lot more than I think people realize. And we usually, for those people coming out of town, we get them a special rate at the event hotel, so they can stay there and save a little bit of money and still do things together too.
Yes,
so
of course, they meet for breakfast and then go from there. So to those of you that aren't sure about the spelling, it's Alex, and her last name is Kava. So you can go to her website and learn about the tickets. I think it's absolutely wonderful. It's like the world's biggest book group because, you know, all there together for this love of books and of this particular author. And the stories that you weave are ever, ever changing and ever original and very authentic, real. So how much research goes into the work you do? I mean, this one has two stories that come together, that collide. And one is a killer on the loose in Washington, D.C. that sadly is awfully close to reality in terms of the violence and deaths in that city. And then there's a missing boy in the woods elsewhere, and the stories come together. How much research do you generally do before you start even? Once you've begun, I'm sure you have to look up other things or figure them out.
I probably do more than I need to do. And sometimes I have to stop myself and say, okay, you've researched as much as you can and go start writing the book. But this one, I do have to give credit to you because it was our last conversation that we had. And I'm not sure if you remember it, but you were talking about the homeless and unsheltered people who were not able to stay at shelters because they couldn't
yes.
bring their pets
yes.
inside. And I went away from our conversation and I was just stunned. And so I started doing my research. And of course I wasn't surprised to find how correct you were and how few there are. And I just thought to myself, I have to put this in a book to make people aware.
And you've done a wonderful job without it being a soapbox or preaching. It's a very fully realized character. You know, it's he just happens to be, as they say in the field now, experiencing homelessness. No one's anymore called a homeless person. They're a person experiencing homelessness, even if it's been, you know, for the better part of their life. And you make it
right.
so real. Is this 100% imagination, or did you actually try to interface with people who were living without a registered domicile?
You know, normally I would try to find somebody like that, but I really did not have the means to do that in a way that wouldn't be intrusive.
Yes.
And so what I did is it was right about the time you and I had our conversation, and it was right about the time that Pensacola, which is kind of a second home to me, they were moving their population, their homeless population, from underneath the I-110 bridge, which is close to downtown. And they, you know, they're building up downtown. They didn't want them there. So they had gathered millions and millions of dollars to be able to move them from there and supposedly find other shelter for them. Well, what people don't realize is that if they accept shelter someplace, they have to accept a whole bunch of different other things. And of course, the pet thing is one of them. But it wasn't maybe 6 months later, and all these people that they moved are moving into the woods in the surrounding areas around the city.
That's right.
And then they're surprised that they're there, and then they don't know what to do with them there. And so I watched quite a few news reports from Pensacola, and some of them had interviews with these people, and I'm just thinking, there was one woman that just broke my heart because she, you know, the stories, lost her job, lost her home, and you just really feel for some of these. And I understand that there are drug addicts and bad people, but for the most part, there's a good percentage of people who didn't intend for this to happen. And so I did a lot of my research that way. And then just about the same time, there actually was a serial killer who was using Amtrak to go from Washington, D.C. to New York City and was killing homeless people. And because he was using Amtrak and going back and forth, and because these people, unfortunately, have no other connections,
that's right.
It took them a long time to be able to catch this guy. And ironically, they caught him at a gas station instead
that
of Amtrak.
Ironic, so since he wasn't using a gas-powered vehicle. I just think that your inclusion of homelessness, along with many other social situations that come up in your books, is not the least of which is PTSD for a veteran, which is a big part of Ryder Creed, and something which is really endemic now across America. We have so many service people who've returned from wars over the last decades because we have just been in endless wars where we send over humans who come back alive but damaged, often only emotionally, if you will, but profoundly. And and that's something that you've always included in his profile. So you've been aware of it for a long time. What do you think raised your awareness of PTSD for veterans?
When we were still in Afghanistan, I would get letters from readers, military, who were stationed over there. And oftentimes we would box up a bunch of books and send them some goodies and different things.
Nice.
And over the years, I've stayed in touch with a few of them, but I don't really know anybody really deeply personal. So a lot of my connections are acquaintances that way, but I do have a deep respect for what they do, a deep respect for what they've gone through.
Yes.
And so I do like to highlight that without knocking people over the head about it. But it does break my heart that veterans are not better taken care of after they've given limbs and brain trauma and all the things that they've given. We should be taking better care of them.
That's definitely a really big social lack in our country. It's terrible. And it's one of the things I'm excited about the Dog Film Festival. Your event is October 12th and October 24th in New York is the 9th annual Dog Film Festival. And it has a new category, which is the Dog Chow Service Dog Salute. And we're going to have films.
I saw that.
Isn't that cool? Films
Very
about
cool.
veterans who have specially trained PTSD service dogs. There's that many who need it, that there's dozens and dozens of organizations around the country. They belong, many of them, to an association of service dog providers. And the films will be there to show the extraordinary human-animal bond that happens in these relationships, but also very specifically to raise people's awareness and compassion and understanding of who these teams are. And I love that you include it in your book as this is another human walking the earth. And we just need to be aware, I think, more aware of what other people, the battles that other people are fighting within themselves, you know, just the challenges.
Absolutely.
I think it's great.
Absolutely.
And the homeless as well. I mean, you know, not only are none of them there on purpose, but often if they are drug addicts or alcoholics, that is self-medication because either of mental illness or to cope with a life that simply crumbled in front of their very eyes.
Right.
Till all they had was
You're
their bedroll
right.
and maybe a dog if they're lucky. All right, so yeah. I would love to have you read a passage from Midnight Creed, if you would, just to give people, to remind people of your wonderful writing style. And I will say that I always say to authors, we can't use a passage that has a lot of dialogue because it's often hard in a reading to get across that this is lines of dialogue. But in your books, it's easy or easier, and it's kind of essential to this. So I'll let you have at it and set the scene as you will.
Okay, sounds good. Well, this is a scene between Brody Creed, who is Ryder's sister, and his dog handler, Jason. And they are in the kennel of all of the canines, and they have a rather large kennel that they rescue dogs and turn them into scent detectors, and they're getting ready to feed them. And Jason's a little bit preoccupied because his girlfriend has just called him. Okay, maybe she didn't have this. She hadn't tackled feeding time all on her own yet. I'm not going to bail on you and the dogs, Jason said. I have obligations and responsibilities. I can't just up and run whenever Taylor wants me to. I thought you said Will texted you. Yeah, but she probably asked him to, right? Now he was looking at her like she really might have an answer. Clearly she didn't. She was the last person to have advice about romantic relationships. She shrugged the way Jason did whenever he didn't have an answer to her question. Then, hoping to get his mind off Taylor, she started grabbing bowls and distributing them while she asked, can you teach me how you do that? Do what? That hand signal that makes dogs sit. She avoided using Chance's name, not wanting to rile him up again. It's not just one thing, he told her, following her lead, picking up bowls and placing them in the appropriate spots. It's your whole manner, your stance. The tone of your voice. A lot of things that Ryder taught me for being a good canine handler. It was working. He was in his element now. Dogs look to us for direction. I think they even look to us to make things fair. So they think we're their alpha? Oh, Ryder says they don't care about that. It's more about them seeing us as their ultimate resource for food and care. Especially some of these guys who've been on the streets or were dumped out in the country where they had to forage for themselves. If there's any dominating or aggression, it's sometimes when a new dog arrives. As soon as the newcomer realizes he doesn't need to scavenge for food anymore, he's going to get his own bowl of food like all the others. There's no need to fuss. But I watch you and Ryder wave your hand or say something, and it looks like magic how the dogs react. She pointed to Chance. You didn't even raise your voice, and he sat right down. You know his story, right? Yeah, his owner chose her abusive boyfriend over him, even after he tried to save her from him. Brody nodded. She remembered how scary she thought the huge German Shepherd was when she first met him. It didn't help matters that she was afraid of dogs at the time. Despite what he had been through, Chance still liked women, and immediately he was friendly and gentle with her. Jason explained that the dog's biggest challenge was learning to trust men and realize not all of them were a threat capable of wielding a baseball bat. Each of these dogs had a story. That was one of the ways Jason had helped her to get over her fear of them. He told their stories of abandonment and heartbreaking abuses. With all of their rescues, their survival had a combination of elements she could relate to: hunger, cold, fear, or pain. When she started thinking of what the dogs had gone through, she realized she no longer feared them. When they, in turn, no longer smelled her fear, they calmed down around her as well. We're almost finished, Brody said, looking up at the wall clock. I'll clean up if you want to go over to Taylor's. I told Will I'd meet them for lunch tomorrow. Okay, that seemed easy. So why did Jason still look so anxious? That wasn't the right word. restless? Let's get everyone settled, he said. Then how about we take Hank and Scout, get a couple of lounge chairs and some refreshments, and set up in the backyard for a meteor shower. Really? Yeah. I didn't think you were even listening to me. I always listen to you. He shot her a smile. Asteroid debris, right? Not a comet. Sounds totally cool. Yes, it did. She wiped a strand of hair out of her face, and she was so excited she didn't mind that she had smeared dog food across her forehead.
It's lovely. You know, it's just, it's so real and genuine. And often I've asked you to read a passage that's like high action and chasing through the woods and the forest and that kind of thing. And there's just something about this book that has so much intimacy between the people in their dialogue and just a genuine connectivity. And the whole way through the book, there's always this awareness of dogs, who they are, how they got to be who they are, how they feel. And I think that's what makes your book so compelling. You put so much time and effort into creating really dynamic stories that pull you along and make you want to know the outcome and make you fear for the welfare of those in jeopardy. But I think it's also a feeling that you as the reader are really meeting people and you're really connecting with them and you're feeling whatever their life path is dealing with at the time. And the dogs too. There's just such a sense of kind of humanity, I guess, in your writing. I'm guessing it's why you've had such success, but also that people will go all the way to Omaha, Nebraska just to have a nice long lunch with you, Alex. I think it's a pretty huge compliment to you as a person, and you as a person comes through you as a writer. And I couldn't be the first one to say that. And I've never been to Omaha to meet you, but you just have always struck me as such a very real and genuine person and so wildly successful as an author in a day and age when there just really isn't even a book industry anymore. People supposedly don't really want books, and you just make that all a lie. It's not true. Where Alex Cava is concerned, there are many books and many readers, and all the joy that you give to people in taking them out of their lives and into the worlds that you create. So I hope you're as proud of yourself as you should be.
I really do appreciate that. I'm always just kind of astounded at how much readers have connected to these characters. And it really makes me want to continue writing when I know that there's a deep connection. Because that's, you know, when you're writing a mystery thriller, it's not always about plot. You want the readers to feel about your characters. And oftentimes the conflict should come from those relationships as much as they come from the plot. And I try to remember that with everyone. And it's just such a pleasure to write about dogs.
That comes across.
They become their own characters. And so their interactions with their humans become a part of the subplots.
Very much so. And I'm just going to lobby that some nice lady on a porch with sweet tea, although that's not an Omaha, Nebraska thing. I'm just recently I was reading some book about the South that she has a pack of Westies. You just got to get Westies in it. You know them so well. You love them so much. And they're such characters. And it would just be wonderful to see a little pack of them show up. Maybe just a cameo, like in an Alfred Hitchcock movie where he was always like
a person in the background. That's a great idea.
Just let somebody walk down the street with a brace or so of Westies. Just get them in there.
You know, that's funny that you bring up Alfred Hitchcock, because in every single book that I've written, except for my very first one, I include a waitress named Rita. And it's the same thing that Alfred Hitchcock tried to do by bringing a cameo.
Rita is so lovely.
Rita is me. My very first job was a waitress, and it's a way for me to insert myself into the book.
I love the idea of bringing
in a pack of Westies.
Absolutely.
Too,
so. Well, I love that Rita the waitress is you. We've run out of time. Alex Cava, Midnight Creed. It's a wonderful book. You could call her the Alfred Hitchcock of dog thriller mystery books. Thank you, Alex.
Oh, thank you so much, Tracy. It was fun.
I hope you enjoyed the show. There were a few more special companies that make this show possible, and I hope you'll try their products because they support my mission to entertain you with valuable information and advice. This show is supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, where they create holistic pet wellness products with an emphasis on their stewardship of the Pet Sustainability Coalition. Earth Animal makes a dazzling array of healing products for dogs and cats, as well as the innovative dog chew, No Hide, and the hybrid dry food, Wisdom, which is sometimes all that my picky Weimaraner Maisie will eat. The show is also brought to you in part by Evermore Pet Food, privately owned by two dedicated women who take human edible, ethically sourced ingredients to gently cook dog food that is then frozen in pouches and shipped right to your door. They founded and run their own company and answer to their own high standards without interference from venture capital investors. My dogs love it every single day.